Tonight was all about dragons. The American Dragon, the Dragon Slayer, Imagine Dragons, even Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was in the house. It was the House of the Dragon episode of AEW Dynamite for August 17th, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. I am not a Game of Thrones guy. I know some of you probably are, so the whole House of the Dragon promotion probably means more to you than it does to me. But tonight was all about, well, a couple of things, really. The main thing being the return of Kenny Omega. The worst-kept secret in all of wrestling, Kenny Omega is back. He was the tag team partner of the Young Bucks in the Trios tournament against Andrade and Rush and Dragon Lee. Coming out at the end of the show, his first match in 9 months. Omega has had numerous surgeries in his time off. Hernia operations, he had a torn labrum that he was wrestling through last year, he had a brace on his arm tonight, and so he was kind of like, they had to rebuild him almost to get him back to this point where he could get back in the ring, but it was good to have him back on TV tonight, another big name for Tony Khan to get back, and again, we'll get into the actual match, we'll get into how he looked, and some of the happenings in that main event. There was a very bizarre ending to the show tonight. But the other big story concerns the AEW World Championship and the way that they opened the show tonight. They opened the show with CM Punk, the AEW World Champion. And what CM Punk did in that opening segment was he reminded people who the hell he is. Because for so long, everybody talks about, oh, it's Punk and the Pipe Bomb. They associate the Pipe Bomb with him. It's such an overused term. We know that CM Punk can talk, he's a good promo, but tonight was one of the better CM Punk promos that we have heard in a very long time. He was firing live rounds at a whole bunch of different people in the company, all these great one-liners in this promo. I thought this was probably the segment of the year when it comes to in-ring promos. And we had a great one from Drew McIntyre with McIntyre and Kevin Owens on Raw Monday night. That was not the promo of the year. That was very good. But this was on another level. And Jon Moxley came out and he was firing shots at Punk as well. He joined in the fun. And I was going to come on here tonight and say that, you know, that's the kind of promo, the one that we got in this opening segment tonight, that is the kind of promo that is going to sell lots of pay-per-views because it looked like this was going to be, obviously, in Chicago, our all-out main event. CM Punk, one-on-one with Jon Moxley to unify the two championships into one. And they did this segment, and they had a big pull-apart brawl, and then there was another segment later on where they came back out after each other. These guys wanted to get at each other in the worst way. Really got you hyped up to want to see the match at All Out, right? What a battleground that's going to be in Chicago, right? Rabid crowd. And then almost just sort of throwing it out there, matter-of-factly, in the middle of the show, during the second hour, they mentioned that, in fact, next week on Dynamite, they can't wait. We're going to get CM Punk one-on-one with Jon Moxley in a championship unification match on Dynamite on free television live next Wednesday. What? I mean, just the way they threw that out there. What? So they are giving this match away on television next week. And I think that, you know, again, my initial reaction is it is completely insane to throw that match out there the way that they did tonight and to give it away on television next week. Now, Tony Khan is not one to promise something and then screw over the fans. We have seen bait and switches on WWE television for years. And hopefully that's something that we will see less of now that we have a new regime in that company. Tony Khan, if nothing else, has been very good about being able to read his hardcore fan base. And he has taken great pains to not do that and to not ruin whatever brand loyalty he has built with his diehard fans. So they announced the match. They plugged the match. They're going to promote the match all week long. I cannot envision them going into Dynamite next week and not delivering some form of an actual match between CM Punk and Jon Moxley, which begs the question, why the hell would they do this? Why would they give this match away next week when you have a pay-per-view coming up in a few weeks in Chicago? This would have been a huge main event on the show. Clearly, they're setting up for one of a few things. the initial thought that I had tied into the promo tonight, and I'm going to talk about everything that was said with Punk and Moxley. But one of the things that Punk did in his promo tonight was he came off very heelish. He went off on Hangman Page. And he actually challenged Hangman Page to come out. He said, Page, you want your rematch for the championship, right? Because Punk beat him at Double or Nothing. Come on out. Let's do it tonight. And he sat down in the ring, and there was no Hangman Page because Hangman Page was not on the show tonight. So he kind of punked him out. No pun intended. He punked him out on live television. And then he made some more comments about him. He really made Hangman look like a bitch on this show. So my first thought is, Hangman is going to in some way be involved here. Whether we get a clean match with a clean winner, that being Punk, and then Hangman comes out and they simply give us a Double or Nothing rematch in Chicago at All Out, which would seem bizarre to me. Punk and Moxley is the far bigger match. I don't know why you would trade that for a rematch that we've already seen a few months ago. Or maybe we are setting up for a triple threat match because Hangman Page has no match. Remember, he was just going to be in the Dark Order's corner in the Trios tournament. Might we be getting Punk and Moxley and Hangman in a triple threat match at All Out? I think that's a very real possibility. There is, of course, another very real possibility. What have I been saying now? All the questions that have come in, where's MJF? Why is Tony Khan allow all the buzz around MJF to die? What is going on? Where is this man? When is he coming back? And my thought is that, first of all, they want CM Punk back first. It makes no sense to bring back MJF if the champion is still out. Well, now we have CM Punk back. And we're heading into the fall. And that was really what I thought Tony Khan was doing more than anything, is waiting until the fall, right? Very important television ratings period, to resume the hottest possible angle that he has, which is bringing back MJF to just basically wreck shit on these shows. Maybe next week we are setting up for the return of MJF. Now that we have CM Punk back, maybe they want MJF in that main event in Chicago. Maybe they don't want to wait. They don't want to wait for Full Gear. Maybe they're going to bring MJF back and he is going to some way work his way. Now, I know he's not in the rankings. It doesn't make sense. Maybe he will work his way into this situation. Maybe he will interfere so we get no clean winner and we have to get the rematch for All Out. See, I still feel like the match at All Out is going to be CM Punk and Jon Moxley. And the way that you do that is you don't give away the entire match next week. You don't give away a clean winner. There's got to be some kind of an indecisive finish. Well, if MJF tries to get involved, that's certainly one way to ruin the match next week. And instead of rewarding him by putting him in the championship match, we simply get the rematch booked for Chicago, Punk against Moxley, this time with a decisive winner. Maybe this time it's no disqualification. So just because we're getting the match next week does not mean that we are not also going to get it All Out. What does Jon Moxley do if they pull the match from the pay-per-view? I just don't see how they don't end up doing this match also in Chicago. So it's a very weird thing, but clearly somebody is going to get involved in some way, and I think that will then lead to a match with a clean finish and Punk going over in Chicago. That's how I see things playing out. But it's very interesting. It does make things a lot more interesting now and makes Dynamite next week a must-see show. I'm sure that's playing into Tony Khan's calculus also. Everybody's going to have to tune in now to see the big main event next week. That's going to be the biggest match, or one of the biggest matches in Dynamite history. You know, last year we had Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson at the Dynamite Grand Slam show. Punk and Moxley in a unification match, arguably, is bigger than that. It is the biggest match, I think, in Dynamite history. Speaking of Danielson, he was on the show tonight as well. 2 out of 3 falls match against Daniel Garcia. And they had an outstanding match. And when the first hour of this show was over, I think this was the best first hour in Dynamite history. Between the Punk promo with Moxley, and we got a long, almost half an hour long match with Danielson and Garcia. That basically, those two things took up virtually all of the first hour. So I thought we had the best first hour in Dynamite history. When the show was over, I thought this was one of the best Dynamite episodes that AEW has put on. It slowed a little bit in parts in the second hour, but the pacing on the show I thought was a little bit better. And I thought overall it was an excellent show. So we'll get into all of it here. A lot of goings on right now. A lot of happenings on the show tonight to get through heading into the pay-per-view. But before we get into all that, I need you guys to do a little something for me. I need you to send in those super chats so that we can go over them later. If you have questions, comments about the show tonight, about Punk and Moxley or MJF or whatever it might be, I'll be reading your messages a little bit later on. And I need you to do me a favor. I need you to hit that like button because we need 550. That's the magic number tonight. We need at least 550 likes on this video. So when I get to the end, if we have at least 550, we will do Be the Booker at the end of the stream. That's the goal tonight. I lowered it a little bit from the other night. So let's try to get to 550 before we get out of here tonight. So let's get into this here because CM Punk opened the show. The AEW World Champion, who made his return last week, came out here tonight. He opened the show. He teased a stage dive as he was walking down the ramp, and then he stopped himself and he thought better of it, which is a smart move. And Punk got into the ring and he got a great ovation. This crowd loved to see CM Punk in the ring. Anytime he has a microphone in his hand, everybody goes nuts. And Punk said that there was someone from the area that he wanted to challenge to a rematch, and he sat down in the middle of the ring. And he laid down the challenge to Hangman Adam Page, the former AEW World Champion. We have not seen much of him since Double or Nothing when he lost the title. He really hasn't done much. And he threw out the challenge and said, you want your rematch? You could have it right now. Come on out. We'll do this right now. Even though Punk was in street clothes and you knew the match wasn't going to happen. Come on out. We'll have our match right now. Nothing. No response. No Hangman Page. And Excalibur was wondering if Punk was even cleared yet. He wasn't even sure that Hangman was in the building. So he didn't come out. And Punk got up and he got really angry and he said, a little bit of advice is that the public apology needs to be as loud as the disrespect. Punk said that that's not cowboy shit, that's coward shit. And he said that anyone else who had a problem should come on down. Because everyone wants the champion until it's time to do champion shit. And this was weird because he came off heelish, you know, the way he was crapping on Hangman, who, of course, is another big fan favorite. The crowd loves Hangman Page. But what I think this is about, here's my read on him saying what he said and calling out Hangman in the way that he did. And that line about the apology has to be as loud as the disrespect. If you paid attention to the build-up to their match at Double or Nothing. Many weeks here on these streams, and you guys, I mean, most of the people I'm seeing here in the chat were here for all those streams. You remember me laughing and making fun of how angry Hangman Page all of a sudden was, right? It was very unlike him to show up and have this kind of attitude and be all pissed off. And I used to joke, I go, what's he so angry about all of a sudden? Like, what did CM Punk do that would make him so upset? We would joke about it here on the streams. And the reason is that, you know, Hangman would come out and he would talk about how Punk is two-faced and, you know, people think he's something that he really isn't and Punk is very selfish and he doesn't care about AEW and I have to save this company from CM Punk. I have to save AEW from this man. And again, it was like, save the company from what? Like, it really didn't make a whole lot of sense. But that was the story they told going into the match. And he was constantly crapping on Punk every single week and making these comments about him. So what this was here was, this was Punk's receipt for all of the disrespect paid to him by Hangman Page heading into their match in Las Vegas for all those weeks. What we had tonight here in this promo, this was his receipt. And that's how I read what he said here. But it did kind of bury Hangman for him not to come out to confront him about it, even though the story was, obviously, Hangman was not at the arena tonight. But I like the idea that CM Punk, he does not forget. He brings the receipts. He's very petty in that way. So he brought a receipt to Hangman tonight. Punk said he knows that John Moxley has a lot of fans, and he might be number one in the heart of the fans, but he is not number one in AEW because he is the true champion. And he said Moxley has always been number two, which drew some boos from the crowd. And Punk told the crowd to stop me if I'm telling lies. He said this a few times. He goes, stop me if I'm telling lies. And he said that Moxley is only the third best guy in his own group in the Blackpool Combat Club. And he says that seems to be a recurring theme in his career, that he is the third best man in his group. And I thought that was the mother of all burns. All the great lines he had in this promo, that was the best one. That was the best one. And that I'm sure will stir up a debate among people who will argue amongst themselves about where Moxley falls in the pecking order of all three Shield members. Who was the best of the three Shield members? And there'll be a whole raging debate now about that. But I thought that was a great burn. So Punk said Moxley's buddy Eddie Kingston is only the third best Eddie that he has ever been in the ring with, and the second best Kingston that he has ever shared a locker room with. Of course, he and Kofi Kingston used to be best friends. They used to play video games on Punk's tour bus, and then Punk left, and I don't think Punk was talking to anybody, so I don't know how friendly they are anymore. But as far as the Eddies that he says he wrestled, now obviously one of them is Eddie Guerrero. We know that. But I was wondering, you know, who's the other Eddie? And my first thought was Umaga. You know, Eddie Fatu. I mean, he did wrestle Umaga in WWE. So I know people were throwing out names of independent wrestlers and stuff. I just assumed he was referring to Umaga. I could be wrong, but that was my first thought. But he's going on about all these people and how, you know, Eddie Kingston is only the third best this and you're the second best that. And he says, all these people aren't number one in anything. He's just burying all of them. None of these guys are number one in a damn thing. He says, tell me when I'm telling lies. CM Punk chant broke out. Now the crowd was getting behind him. Punk said that he's looking forward to testing himself and his foot against John Moxley. He said Moxley won't even be the first guy named John who he will beat in Chicago for a world championship. And that, of course, got nice ooh from the crowd. Actually, that was a good burn, too. I like that line, too. So Punk was emptying the chamber basically on everybody at this point. He was firing live rounds at basically anybody and everybody. I thought this was fucking great. So finally, John Moxley's music plays, and Punk is being very sarcastic, and he says, well, I guess I'm going to have a while before he gets out of the crowd all the way here to the ring. And he lays down on the mat, and he starts doing snow angels on the mat as Moxley makes his way through the crowd. Moxley gets into the ring, and he's mocking Punk, and he goes, look out, ladies and gentlemen, CM Punk is dropping pipe bombs. He added that Punk was doing what he does best by letting his mouth write checks that his body can't cash, and he pointed to Punk's gimpy foot when he said that. Moxley said that it's just the microphone, and it doesn't mean shit, nor does the belt over Punk's shoulder, but he also said that his own belt doesn't mean shit, and he threw it down. He goes, it doesn't mean shit until he beats CM Punk. And Moxley called himself the heart and soul of AEW. Punk told Moxley, you could be the heart and soul, I'll be the dollars and cents. Moxley said that Punk only came to AEW because he ran out of money, and everyone knows it. He accused Punk of running out of fighting spirit a long time ago. Moxley said that if Punk wants to prove him wrong, he could try to do something about it right now. And he said, I don't think you're going to do shit. He drops the microphone, and Punk said they have a match at the pay-per-view, and he was afraid that if he touched him, he might bleed all over him. So clearly, CM Punk has been watching the shows all these months, a couple of months that he's been gone, since Moxley bleeds in every single match that he's in. He didn't want Moxley to bleed all over him. Absolutely nothing that Punk was saying in this promo. I shouldn't say absolutely nothing, because then all the Shield fans who think Moxley was number one will come after me. But a lot of what Punk said in this promo, he wasn't wrong. He was not telling lies. So Punk dropped his microphone. He went nose to nose with Mox, and Punk shoved Moxley, who kissed him in return, And then they started trading very weak, very, very weak looking punches. Security ran out, got booed for trying to break these guys up. They were pulling them apart. They were both trying to get at each other. Moxley went to ringside. He tossed a chair inside. Punk set the chair up and took a seat. And Moxley tried to get at him again. And they just kept being pulled apart by security. And every time they were pulled apart by security, they would come at each other again. This went on for several minutes until finally they cut away. The right hands that when they started fighting, when these two started brawling in the ring, and the right hands that they were throwing at each other were hilariously bad. Okay, so I'm putting this segment over in a big way as far as the verbal stuff, especially from Punk. But once they started trading shots, like this, I mean, this looked awful. This looked like sometimes we get pull aparts with the women that also don't look good. Like there's nothing behind the punches. That's kind of what this looked like. It looked ridiculous. Like when you have these two guys going at each other and they're making it really personal, you got to double leg the guy. You know, you can roll around on the mat. You can't be throwing punches like that. If you're gonna do a promo like this, when it comes time to start throwing bombs, you got to throw fucking bombs. We saw Kenny Omega in the main event tonight. The guy is held together by fucking, you know, rubber bands and paper clips, right? At least in storyline, they're trying to sell the fact that he's not 100%. He's got a fucking, you know, one of these compression tops on. He's got a brace on his shoulder. And he's in the corner throwing 10 punches at Dragon Lee, and he is hammering the fucking shit out of this guy. I mean, he is putting everything he can behind those fists, and I'm like, holy shit, that's what we should have seen in the opening segment when these guys started throwing shots at each other. So that would be my only critique about that. I just thought that looked hilariously bad. But the rest of this I thought was excellent. Punk was a complete menace on the microphone in this segment. I give Punk the win. I just think those lines were brutal. In a good way. Those lines were brutal. Yeah, the line from Moxley about Punk, we all know the only reason you came back is because you needed the money, and it just felt forced. You know, whereas what Punk was saying, there was a lot of truth in what he was saying. So again, a top-notch segment. And now we'll see what they do next week, because I cannot imagine that we are going to not only get the match, but get a clean finish. And they're just going to come up with a totally different match for All Out. My guess is that, again, whether it's MJF or, you know, whatever it ends up being, that there's going to be some kind of interference at play. We're not going to get a clean winner, and we're going to end up getting the match anyway in Chicago, maybe with a stipulation. Maybe it does turn into a triple threat. But I have every reason to still believe that we are going to see CM Punk and Jon Moxley in the same ring in Chicago Labor Day weekend. I don't think this changes that at all. So we go to the back. Oh, look at this. Brian Becerra. Just caught that out of the corner of my eye with that $40 super chat drop. What's going on, Bryant? Good to hear from you, brother. We go to the back. Powerhouse Hobbs. First blood. Who said that? Paulie Walnuts. Man, we lost Paulie Walnuts this year. We lost a lot of people this year. But we lost Paulie Walnuts from The Sopranos. But he said they could have a first blood match. You know what? That'd be right up Moxley's alley. It's going to be a short match, though. You can't put Jon Moxley in a first blood match. It'll be over in 3 minutes. So that on second thought, that probably won't work too well. So backstage, Powerhouse Hobbs was with Tony Schiavone. And he said that he doesn't need friends, because Tony wanted to know, why did you turn your back on your friend? Why did you do what you did to Ricky Starks? And Hobbs said, I don't need friends. He says, Ricky Starks proved to the world that he was okay with losing. He says, I'm not okay with losing. He says, for 2 years, Ricky walked around like he was God's gift, hiding behind me. And Hobbs said that he was hired to do one thing, to make sure Ricky stayed the FTW champion. And Starks couldn't do it. Hobbs breaks backs and he breaks necks. And as far as QT Marshall and the Factory, who, remember last week, they let him down. Aaron Solo lost to Ricky Starks, and Powerhouse Hobbs told them before the match, you better win. Your problem better not become my problem. And the Factory let him down, and he said he's going to take care of the Factory, and he walked off. This was a rare backstage promo in AEW that was not interrupted. I was shocked. That might have been the most shocking thing on the entire show. Powerhouse Hobbs actually had time to talk. Nobody walked up to him. Nobody hit him from behind. I was amazed. Justin Roberts was in the ring to do the introductions for the best 2 out of 3 falls match between Brian Danielson and Daniel Garcia. This is a match where if you are a professional wrestling fan and you are a fan of the more technical aspects of wrestling, submission holds and grappling and things of that nature, this was right up your alley. These two guys went in there. They had a clinic for nearly 30 minutes. They went in there and they had a great professional wrestling match. If you are a pro wrestling fan, this, and the week is not over yet. We still have SmackDown on Friday and Rampage. But if you are a pro wrestling fan, we're only midway through the week. You are in fucking heaven right now. Between the match here, the action we got here on this show, and all the wrestling that we got, 3 15-plus-minute-long matches on Raw Monday night, which must be some kind of record, you are in wrestling heaven this week. Plus the G1. I didn't even mention the G1, which I'm so far behind. I'm going to talk about the G1 here in a little bit, though. So they locked each other in heel hooks early on. After a break, Danielson was laying in the yes kicks, and he landed a running knee in the corner. Garcia countered a Frankensteiner into a cradle for a near fall. So they had a chop exchange, and Garcia hit a butterfly suplex into an armbar. Danielson reversed it into a regal plex for 2. Again, back and forth, you know, very, very grounded with these two early on. Garcia escaped out to the floor. Danielson hit a diving drop kick, but Garcia came back with a back suplex on the floor. Back inside, Danielson applied a triangle sleeper. Garcia countered out of it, though, into a pile driver. He dumped this man on his head. He dumped him right on his noggin. And you're going to get a reaction. You're going to get gasps from the crowd anytime you drop Brian Danielson on top of his head. So he gave him a pile driver. It got a big reaction from the crowd. Garcia locked Danielson in a dragon sleeper. And after, I'd say, about 15 or 20 seconds, he went out. Bryce Remsburg called for the stoppage. And for the second time, really the second straight time, because this was the first fall of a three falls match. The last time we saw these two in the ring together, which was the last time we saw Danielson in a match, was weeks ago, and Garcia won that match. So back-to-back wins for Daniel Garcia over Brian Danielson. And this was also the second time that he put Danielson to sleep. He goes up one fall to none here in this match. This was about 10 minutes in. So there was no rest period. Danielson barely made it to his feet before the count of 10 from Remsburg. Garcia maintained control through the second commercial break, and it was during that break that Garcia busted Danielson open on top of his head. He gave him a DDT on the exposed concrete. I think he had pulled up the mats, gave him a DDT on the floor, and Danielson came up bleeding. So the very first match on Dynamite, we have blood. I mean, it's probably not even worth mentioning anymore. You just sort of assume. Just assume that we'll be a match or two into these shows and there'll be blood. So we had blood. Garcia went back to the Dragon Sleeper. Danielson turned it into a cradle. Only a few minutes later, tied this thing up at one fall apiece. It was very sudden. It was a very quick fall. So now we're all knotted up at one fall apiece. Garcia continued to attack Danielson, who trapped Garcia in a tree of woe, laid in the yes kicks before hitting an avalanche German suplex. He followed that up with a missile drop kick. Danielson kept up the attack on the floor. He was repeatedly pulling Garcia into the ring post, and they teased a countout spot. Garcia made it into the ring. He was also bleeding. I didn't see it right away, but then the announcers made mention of it, and sure enough, there was some blood on Daniel Garcia. So we get double juice in this match. Garcia locked on his version of a sharpshooter, which he has been calling the Dragon Tamer. We had a dragon sitting right outside, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He was the guest timekeeper here for this match. In fact, I have my Ricky the Dragon Steamboat t-shirt on today. I thought, hey, this is the House of the Dragon episode. Everyone's talking about dragons. I may as well have my dragon t-shirt on. So Danielson countered the Dragon Tamer into the lapel lock. Garcia managed to escape. He caught Danielson with a corner drop kick. Danielson, though, didn't sell it at all. He just shrugged it off, and he smacked the shit out of this kid. He smacked the soul right out of Daniel Garcia. Garcia, though, came back with Danielson's own Busaiku knee, the running knee strike for two. Danielson hit ground and pound before stomping Garcia's head in, and Danielson locked on the triangle. Garcia, this time he was not strong enough to counter that into a pile driver, so he tried for the desperation strikes. Danielson applied the lapel lock, he laid in the elbows, and ultimately that led to the referee stoppage. 26 minutes into this match, Brian Danielson wins 2-1. He gets his revenge on Daniel Garcia. After the match, Danielson giving him applause. He's paying respect to this kid. Tremendous professional wrestler, right? He appreciates that. He's showing love for Daniel Garcia, and he extends his hand. He wants to give this kid a handshake. And Garcia is kind of out of it. He stumbles to his feet. He's surveying the situation, trying to figure out what he should do. People wanted to see him shake Brian's hand. They were cheering for this. They wanted to see Garcia shake his hand. Chris Jericho was on commentary for the match. And at this point, he had left the commentary desk. And so you figure he was going to attack Danielson from behind. They had the tight camera shot. And sure enough, here comes Jericho from behind. He knocks down Danielson. And Garcia is appalled by this. He doesn't smile. He doesn't join in. He's basically saying, what the fuck? What are you doing? And he goes over and he shoves him away. He shoves Jericho away from Danielson. Jericho's got his finger in his face, like, what are you doing? And he put his hand out. He smacked his hand away. People start cheering. Crowd broke into a loud chant of, you're a wrestler. Loud, all throughout the building, a loud chant of, you're a wrestler. Aimed directly at Daniel Garcia, which was great. This was an outstanding pro wrestling match. This was a pay-per-view caliber match, especially for the time they gave it. They gave these guys a lot of time. And very few, here's another observation about this match, very few pin attempts in this match. It was more submission-based, so there were a lot of submission attempts, but it was just a lot of action. It wasn't just a match built around constant attempts at near falls. So that was one of the things that struck me about this match. 26-minute match, you know, these days, you're going to get a near fall, you know, the close 2.5. You'll get that about 5 to 10 times down the stretch. And we really didn't have much of that here in this match. And the post-match angle really makes things very interesting heading into All Out between Danielson and Jericho, which is not official, but it will be. It'll be official. It'll be Danielson against Jericho at the pay-per-view next month. In the back later, Jericho was with Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, and he was being interviewed. And he said that he would give Garcia the benefit of the doubt. He had this great match tonight, coming off a loss. He's going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's, you know, his head's not in the right space. But he said next week he's going to need an answer. Are you with us or are you not with us? Are you a wrestler or are you a sports entertainer? They're going to be in the ring next week, and he's going to need an answer from Daniel Garcia. And I said it last week on the stream. I said this match between Jericho and Danielson at the pay-per-view, the story of this match, it's going to be about Daniel Garcia. It's going to be a fight for the soul of Daniel Garcia, and that's exactly what it looks like we're going to get. I mean, we'll see what happens in the segment next week. Maybe it ends up being one big swerve, right? And Jericho and Garcia, they're all, you know, all is well, and they end up screwing over Danielson somehow. But I said this match is going to be a battle for, it's like a custody battle. Who gets custody of Daniel Garcia? He's like the Dominic of this match. It's like Eddie and Ray at SummerSlam all over again, only without the ladder. Unless they want to hang him from the ceiling, they could do that too. They could put him back in that shark cage. They could hang Daniel Garcia from the cage in the ceiling, and I don't know, the first person to get up and unlock the cage door can take him, and they can just, you can whisk him away somewhere. But that's what that match is going to be about it All Out. In that segment in the back with Jericho, Menard, and Parker, Ricky Steamboat showed up. He interrupted. And Jericho said that he has hated him for the last 15 years. It's actually been 13 years since that WrestleMania and the match that Jericho had with Steamboat at Backlash. It was 2009. Steamboat said that Danielson would make a better mentor for Garcia than Jericho ever would. Jericho and Menard, they walked off, and Parker stayed back, and Parker grabbed Steamboat by the throat. And Steamboat gave Parker a great sounding chop to the chest. And off he went, and they went to, I think it was either commercial or the next segment, but Ricky Steamboat, man, he could still lay those chops in. He could still lay those chops in. I'm so glad that he turned down that whole Ric Flair's last match thing. Because he said, you know, he had discussions, I guess, with Conrad and about doing it, and who knows the reason why. Maybe they didn't offer him enough money, but, you know, when he did a High Spots virtual signing many, many weeks ago, and he said, you know, I just thought about it, and I didn't want people to remember me that way, and I know Conrad came out after that and said, that's not the whole story, and blah, 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 but clearly they tried to get Steamboat for that match. I'm glad Steamboat didn't accept that match. As sad as that match was and the whole Flair thing, I like to remember Steamboat's, you know, when he had that very brief comeback in 09, he looked pretty good. He looked damn good for a guy who hadn't been in the ring doing that in so many years. It's a shame that he got hurt when he did the angle with the Nexus all those months later. Or the following year, I guess it was. But I'm glad he wasn't in the ring for that Flair match. So we had the Gun Club against Varsity Blondes. This did not last long. This went all of 30 seconds. Austin Gunn knocked Brian Pillman Jr. off the apron. Colton Gunn tagged in. He hit Griff Garrison with the Colt 45 for the win. Billy Gunn got into the ring. And he told his sons that that's what they had to do. That's what he was looking for. He was looking for that aggression. That's what he wanted to see out of his boys. And he's super proud of them, and they all hugged. Got a nice little Hallmark moment here, which was quickly ruined by Stokely Hathaway, who walked out, and he was standing there on stage, and he was looking at the Gun Boys, and all of a sudden, the Gun Boys, they attacked their father from behind. Austin and Colton Gunn, they attack Father S from behind. They're kicking his ass until the Acclaimed come out. They storm down to the ring to make the save. They chase away the Gun Club. Austin and Colton, they go and chase them off into the crowd. Anthony Bowens is in the ring, and he asks Billy Gunn, who is now sitting in the corner after being assaulted by his sons. And Anthony Bowens wants him to scissor him. He says, scissor me, daddy ass. Billy Gunn gets up, and he scissors him, and he hugs both members of the Acclaimed, and everybody cheers. On the one hand, I can understand wanting the Ass Boys to get away from their father so they can kind of branch out on their own and try to get over on their own. But on the other hand, their father is way more over than they are. And the tag team that their father is now friendly with, the Acclaimed, is also way more over than they are. So my fear for them, if now that they've split them up, apparently, Billy Gunn could still be a character on this show. I don't know if they're going to have him managing the Acclaimed, or I don't know. I don't know what the plan is going to be for Billy Gunn. But I could see him still having a good spot on the show. Austin and Colton, they're going to just end up being fodder on Dark. I just don't see, I don't see that working out too well for them. I'll just say that. I don't see this boating very well for the two of them. We had a video package highlighting some of the goings-on over the last few weeks with Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh, and Wardlow. And FTR has come to Wardlow's, not his aid, but they've come out to help Wardlow a few times. And so Sanjay Dutt's in the back, and he's cutting this promo. He's going nuts. And they challenged Wardlow and FTR to a trios match at All Out. They laid down the gauntlet to a trios match. Satnam Singh dared Wardlow. Oh. Send in the clowns. We got ourselves a circus tonight. Is that Steve? Of course, it has to be Steve. That's Steven's favorite super chat. Bully the clown. Steven, thank you. So Satnam Singh dared Wardlow to powerbomb him. And that really, I mean, look, from day one, when they started this angle, it had to be building to that. It had to be building to the spot where Wardlow gets this big bastard up and powerbombs him. So that has to happen at All Out. They're already teasing it. They have to give the people what they want. So we're going to get that spot. But FTR being in this match, you know, FTR has been one of the hottest things in wrestling. And certainly in AEW, Ring of Honor matches, all the stuff they've been doing all year. Tag team matches, singles matches, all the belts they have, right? One of the most decorated tag teams, one of the most over acts in the entire company. And to think that the only thing, the best thing they could come up with for FTR on one of the biggest shows of the year is a trios match that is meaningless. It's a backdrop for Wardlow to try to powerbomb Satnam Singh. That really is what it's about. They're in the background. FTR is in the background for this. I don't know if they're just phasing FTR down a little bit because Dax is dealing with a torn labrum and he's pretty beat up. Probably not, because Dax is in a match next week. He's wrestling Jay Lethal. So it just seems like a waste of FTR on this show. But, you know, once they decided that, okay, we're getting Kenny back, we got to put them and the Bucks together in the trios thing, and we want to debut this trios, you know, championship. I think any plans they had for a rematch with FTR and the Bucks just went on the back burner. That probably was the original plan for this show. Once they got Omega back and they knew they were going to introduce the trios titles, FTR was left without a spot on the show. So it's better than nothing. At least they'll be on the show, but it just feels like such a waste of them. We got another promo in the back. We had Death Triangle back there. Pac, Rey Fénix, Penta, Alex. And Pac said that Will Ospreay, he likes to parade around like he's the best that Britain has ever produced. He said there's unfinished business, and he's looking forward to next week when they face Ospreay and Aussie Open in the opening round of the Trios Championship Tournament. That is a match that I am very much looking forward to. And I did say earlier I was going to mention the G1. If you remember, when I made my G1 climax predictions many, many weeks ago on the podcast, my prediction for the G1 final, which I believe is taking place in just a few hours, I believe. My prediction was it's going to be Okada and it's going to be Will Ospreay. And sure enough, it is Okada against Will Ospreay. So I nailed it. I nailed the final. And my pick to win was Okada. I'm going to stick with my pick. I think Okada wins, LOL. It is the big 50th anniversary for New Japan this year. He is their ace. I know Tanahashi is the ace, but Okada's the ace. That's how they book him anyway. And look, Jay White is the champion. If Will Ospreay wins the G1, heel against heel, yeah, Ospreay could win and he could lose the briefcase. We've seen that before. Kota Ibushi already lost the briefcase. I'm going to stick with Okada. But I nailed the final, so I'm very happy with that. Jungle Boy was back out in his spiffy leather jacket. Made his way to the ring for a promo. He talked about the Christian Cage is a pussy t-shirt that he was wearing on television last week or the week before. And how he got into trouble for it. He was asked, he didn't say by who, but he was asked to never wear it again. And he said that he's tried to get his hands on Christian now for many weeks. He even tried to hit him with a car. Said that he's going to continue to chase Christian until he gets his hands on him, or, and then he paused and he turned around to look at the crowd. It's kind of an awkward pause. He says, or you can man up and you can face me at All Out. Now, the reason that he paused, I assume, is because he was being showered in what chance? For whatever reason, you know, Jungle Boy is a big fan favorite. The crowd tonight, they were just peppering this guy with constant what chance. And I think it threw him off. I think even he was thrown off by it, so he had that awkward pause, and then he either, maybe he forgot what he was going to say, but he resumed his promo at that point. Christian walked out, which is very appropriate. It is very appropriate that after a promo where this man was wadded almost out of the building, here comes Christian. And for those who know the story, Christian is the reason why we have that fucking chant in the first place. So I thought, well, this is very appropriate. Here comes the prick that's responsible for all of this. That was the message that Steve Austin left on his machine all those many years ago on his voicemail. Story got out, and all of a sudden, this whole what thing became a thing. It was because he left a voicemail for Christian. Blame Christian. So Christian comes out on stage, and he says, my answer is no. And he says, look, things are getting out of hand. Last week, Luchasaurus headbutted an AEW official, and that's why he's not here. He's been suspended. He got into the ring, and he claimed that, look, I want to fix our problems here. I don't want to fight you. I want to get the family back together. I want you to come home. I want to put an end to this. I don't want to fight you. I don't want to have a match with you. And Jungle Boy kind of teased, hugging him, and instead he tackled him. And Christian got up. Jungle Boy tackled him again, threw some punches. They ended up outside the ring, and Jungle Boy was going after him, and Christian kicked the knee. He ran Jungle Boy's head into the barricade. He tried to toss him into the ring steps. Jungle Boy, though, reversed, slammed Christian's head off the steps a few times. And Jungle Boy got Christian's arm in the slot that kind of connects the steps to the ring post. And he wedged his arm in there, and he stomped on it, and security came over to get Jungle Boy away from him. I thought there was good aggression here at the end from Jungle Boy, but this was not one of his better promos. And he has improved. He's gotten better. You know, he's gotten a little more comfortable in his promos, but tonight was not. And maybe, I don't know if it was the what chance or what it was, but this was not one of his better promos. We had Tony Storm against Kylan King. Thunder Rosa was shown watching the match backstage. King got some offense in early on, sent Tony to the outside. She caught Tony going for a move of some kind, and she drove her back into the edge of the ring and into the barricade heading into the commercial break, which was pretty much the bulk of the match. Storm DDT'd King, hit her with a high-angle DDT, and got the win. Rosa was shown clapping backstage. The announce team wondered about how enthusiastic she really was for her friend. Half the match took place during the commercial break. So from what I saw of this match, it was okay. I don't think this match needed to be as competitive as it was. But they did make it official. It is going to be Thunder Rosa defending her AEW Women's Championship against Toni Storm at All Out in Chicago. And as I said last week, if it were me, I'd pull the trigger. I'd do a title change. I put that title on Toni Storm in this match. And then it was time for Trios Tournament action on this show. We had La Facción Ingobernable, Andrade El Idolo, Rush, and making his AEW debut, Dragon Lee, taking on the Young Bucks and their partner of mystery, the mystery man himself. Right up until the very end, some people on my timeline thought it was going to be Hangman Page because we hadn't seen him yet tonight. It was never going to be Hangman Page. From the moment Hangman Page denied their request and said no to them on television last week, Tony Khan left that door open. They never said anything about Kenny Omega. They could have had anybody in that spot. And Tony could say, well, we never announced Kenny Omega. But it was just like Punk last year for the first dance in Chicago. They never once said CM Punk's name, but it was pretty clear who was going to be debuting on that show. He just let the fans, he let it build. He let them do all the promotion for him. So he didn't let this entire week go by of people speculating and assuming that Kenny Omega was going to be the partner, unless Kenny Omega was going to be the partner. That's why I had people in the chat when I put the streaming page up earlier, because I had it right there in the thumbnail, as you can see. And in the thumbnail, it said Kenny Omega returns. And they're like, oh boy, you're really jumping the gun. I'm like, common fucking sense. It's not going to be anybody else. It was always going to be Kenny Omega. And sure enough, Justin Roberts goes through the long-winded intro that he usually does for Kenny. And out comes Kenny Omega 9 months. He has been out of the ring for 9 months. He could have popped out a kid in 9 months. He gets a big reaction. Don Callis was back with him, as was Michael Nakazawa, playing the role of assistant. Callis sat in on commentary for the match. Omega was wearing a compression top. He had a brace on his left shoulder. The man had like a dozen different surgeries in his time off. hernia operations. He had shoulder problems. He had knee problems, all kinds of problems. So after some Bucks action at the beginning of this, Omega got the hot tag into the match. And this is the spot that I mentioned earlier on in the stream. He goes to the corner with, I believe it was Dragon Lee. And he rains down the 10 punches in the corner. And he was letting these punches fly. And they zoomed in. They had that top rope camera, like right on top of the ring post. So we got like a bird's eye view. And so if he was really holding back on these punches, we would have noticed he was laying those shots in. I said, that's what they should have been doing in the opening segment. That's how you throw a fucking punch. So Omega was looking good here at the beginning of this. He and Andrade ended up in the ring together. Jose, the assistant, climbed up on the apron that distracted Omega. Roosh got into the ring. He took a cheap shot at Kenny. Andrade and Roosh, they put the boots to Omega heading into a picture-in-picture break. When we came back, we had a triple suplex spot by Omega and the Bucks. Nick landed a step-up flip dive, and then all three of the heels hit big moves with Andrade landing double knees in the corner. They isolated Matt Jackson in their corner after another commercial. Omega got the hot tag and hit snapdragons on all three men. Matt hit an assisted buckle bomb and a cannonball senton on Dragon Lee. The Bucks took out Roosh and Andrade before Kenny fired up for the Terminator dive. He was getting everybody worked up. Here comes, we haven't seen a Terminator dive in 9 months. Dragon Lee cut him off, though, before he could pull it off. And Andrade and Roosh, they ended up, this was the craziest spot of the match. So Roosh and Andrade are outside, and they're holding Kenny up against the barricade. And Dragon Lee is in the ring, and he's preparing for a dive. He's going to do a Terminator dive of his own. And he hits the ropes, and he comes soaring through the ropes with a tope. And this fucker, he wiped out Omega, and he went flying over into the front row, nearly wiped out the entire front row. There were kids in the front row. Very lucky. It was a very dangerous, very stupid spot. Looked great, but it was a very dumb spot. And they're very lucky that nobody got knocked out or popped in the mouth. So everybody's flipping out now because, again, it looked great. And everybody is down. So Lee took out Nick Jackson with a Hurricanrana to the floor. Andrade went for the moonsault on Omega back in the ring, but Omega rolled out of the way. But then Andrade did the second flip, and he got a near fall out of that. Andrade hit the hammerlock DDT, but Matt Jackson pushed Roosh into the pile to break up the fall. A little too close for comfort kind of near fall there, but they did break it up. Omega fired up with a V-trigger to Dragon Lee, and he barely got Dragon Lee up and dropped him with a very weak-looking one-winged angel to get the win for his team. Very weak-looking one-winged angel, I assume, by design, because the story of this match was Kenny Omega is not fully healed from his injuries. You could tell because he's got the top and he's got the brace, and the announcers wouldn't shut up about it. He is still clearly not 100%. That is the story here. And they ended up pulling out the win, but it took a lot out of Omega. But now they advance. They move on to the next round. They are going to meet either Death Triangle or Will Ospreay and Aussie Open in the next round. Of course, they're going to have that match on TV next week. We'll find out who their opponents are going to be. After the match, it was very weird. Because, again, it looked like they were running low on time. And the focus should have been on Omega. He's back. They won. But instead, back in the ring, we see Andrade, and he hooks Dragon Lee for the hammerlock DDT, which the production team, they almost missed the whole thing. They cut back to it right as he was hitting the DDT, but they almost missed the whole fucking thing. He drops Dragon Lee with the hammerlock DDT, and Dragon Lee's mask goes flying off his head. I think the way that Andrade had his arm hooked, just the motion, unintentionally ripped the mask. No way that was done on purpose. Ripped the mask off by accident. And you could plainly, for a split second, you could see Dragon Lee's face before he covered up. So his fucking mask goes flying off his face right as they're going off the air. This happened so fast, you blinked and you missed it. So that was a rough ending, though, to the show. Otherwise, though, I thought it was a fun main event, though. I thought it was a very good main event. The story being that Omega was not 100%. And I just think it was top-tier selling from Kenny. Top-tier selling from Omega. That's going to be the story, I think, for the rest of this tournament. Question is, who do they face? Who are they going to go to the final? Because you know they're going to the finals. They're probably going to win the whole thing. It's going to be Omega and the Bucks. Who do they face in the finals? Now, last week I was saying that if it were me, it would be House of Black. I would love to see House of Black in there against Omega and the Bucks. And after thinking about it more last week, and it was actually one of you guys in the chat who mentioned, you know, Hangman being with the Dark Order, and it made all the sense in the world. It is probably going to be Omega and the Bucks against Dark Order. Dark fucking Order is probably going to go to the finals of this thing because Hangman, unless he gets involved, and we'll find out next week if he gets involved in the Punk and Moxley stuff, then Hangman may have a spot in the main event at All Out. But if not, he has said that he will be in the corner of the Dark Order. If that's the case, then the Dark Order is not going to get bounced in the opening round. They're going to go all the way to the finals of this thing. And they may well shoot an angle where one of the members gets injured, Evil Uno gets hurt, something happens, Hangman steps in. Now you've got Hangman as part of the Dark Order facing Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks in the finals at All Out. So I don't think it's going to be the House of Black. I do think Miro and probably Sting and Darby will get involved when House of Black has their match. And we'll end up with another trios match at the pay-per-view, only it'll be House of Black against Sting, Darby, and Miro. That's where I think this is headed. I was thinking Malakai one-on-one with Miro, but then what do you do with Sting and Darby? So I think it's going to be a trios match, and I think we're going to get Dark Order in the finals of this tournament. But Omega and the Bucks clearly are being groomed to be the first trios champions. I mean, it's pretty clear at this point. Before I move on, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Not only am I happy to have them as a sponsor, but I have been able to make use of their service. How we care for our mind affects so many different aspects of our life and our experiences. Keeping your brain healthy and functioning the way that it's supposed to is very important. That's why I would recommend BetterHelp online therapy. Sometimes you just have a problem that you can't fix on your own. Whether you're having trouble sleeping or you're stressed out about work, you're dealing with a lot of anxiety at home, whatever it may be. Sometimes you just need to talk to someone. Someone with experience in dealing with these kinds of issues. They can be that sounding board that you need and can help you through it. That was my experience, and if it helped me, it can help you too. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and live chat sessions with your very own therapist. You can look them in the eye, or you can turn your camera off, whatever you're comfortable with. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. In my case, it was a lot less than that. So if you're on the fence about it, let me give you that little extra push that you need. Right now, Sound Off listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp.com/solomonster. Rampage on Friday night. They are having a trios match. Best friends take on the Trustbusters. If you are a Trustbusters fan, you're in for another treat on Friday night. Athena takes on Penelope Ford, who's back. She's been gone for many months with an injury. Ring of Honor champion Claudio Castagnoli will speak. We have Hook defending the FTW title against the reality Zach Clayton. I forgot this great appearance that he had on Rampage last week. You know Zach Clayton, right? One of the hottest stars in all of wrestling. That's right, yeah. The reality, Zach Clayton. Right. We have the tag team titles on the line. Swerve and our glory. Man, I'm losing my voice. Swerve and our glory. There we go. I'm back. Taking on Private Party for the tag team titles. Dynamite next week. We'll have Death Triangle against the United Empire. Dax Harwood one-on-one with Jay Lethal. That should be a hell of a fucking match. And CM Punk one-on-one with Jon Moxley. It's going to be unification time. AEW World Champion against the AEW Interim World Champion. If Tony Khan is advertising Punk against Moxley, then we are getting Punk against Moxley. But that doesn't mean we are getting Punk against Moxley with a decisive finish. As I said, Hangman could factor into it, but I think there's probably a better chance that MJF is coming. I think MJF is coming. Maybe they want MJF in Chicago. Maybe they want MJF. They don't want to wait anymore. Again, I find it hard to believe that MJF would return and would be gifted with a championship match at All Out. But that doesn't mean that he can't get involved in some way. The champion is back. It makes sense that MJF would show up as well. He certainly has history with Punk. And Punk should be the one that ultimately he unseats to become the AEW World Champion. So the pieces are falling into place, but it's still very, very weird that they are giving this initial match away on TV next week. But I'll tell you what, between that match and Harwood against Lethal, Death Triangle against Ospreay, and Aussie Open, I mean, that's a hell of a fucking lineup. And that's not even the full card. They already have a hell of a lineup for next week's show. That's going to be a great one. So I'm looking forward to that. On Twitter, at Solomonster, you guys, according to you, have given the show an 83% thumbs up rating, 11% thumbs in the middle, and just 6% thumbs down. Almost 1,500 votes in. So get those votes in at Solomon so you can vote in the Dynamite poll and you can follow all of my other shenanigans. Hey, Drew Johnson, thank you for the 5. Said Omega is back. Let's go. Solomonster is the man. Support the channel, everyone. Yeah, where are we at on the likes? Remember, 550 is the goal for Be the Booker. We have 530. We're close. We're only 20 away. Who is going to be the 20 that put us over the top? Raise those hands. I want to know who it's going to be who hits that like button. All right, let's get to your questions here. We got a lot of super chats to go through. I will read your messages if you send one in. Unless it is obscene in some way, then I will not read it. But I will thank you. I will thank you nonetheless for your super chat. Oh, we begin here with Joseph Brooks with a completely, totally random question that has absolutely nothing to do with Dynamite, but he wants to know, how would you book DX against the NW? I would do it on a pay-per-view. I don't know what else you want me to say. They were not part of the same company, so when you say, how would you book it, I don't know how to approach that question without sitting here and taking the time to map everything out from start to finish, which is ridiculous. You would do DX against the NWO, maybe in some kind of a War Games match. You have Triple H, X-Pac, the Outlaws against your four or five best key members of the NWO. You put them in the one big cage, two rings, War Games style. That's how you do it. I watched the DX biography, by the way, on A&E. I did watch the DX biography. I thought it was, unless you absolutely do not know anything about the story, I thought it was largely kind of a waste of time. But we'll talk about that on the podcast on Sunday. I have some thoughts on that. Food Hive says, literally the fourth time that Dynamite opens with a promo. It doesn't happen very often, though. And he says, I told you that Daniel Garcia was going to join the BCC after he shed blood with Mox and Danielson. My theory is coming to fruition. I should write this show. Well, he hasn't joined yet. He has not joined yet. So don't get ahead of yourself. Von Tell, $4.99 Super Chat. With how Triple H booked him and how lackluster his stint has been in AEW, do you think that Andrade would be the next big name to return to WWE? Depends on how long his contract is. I do think that he would be interested probably in going back. Now that Vince McMahon is gone, Triple H certainly did right by him in NXT. And, you know, his wife works for the company, so that's convenient. If he has time left on his deal, he's not going anywhere. If his contract was up in 6 months, I definitely think that he would look into going back to WWE. There would be feelers sent, and I think Andrade could be that next name to go back. We've got MattView72. Mox against Punk next week instead of All Out. Make it make sense. I just did. Amazing Dynamite regardless. Have a great show, Solomon. Justin Jack. Weird that we're getting Punk and Mox early. Do you think that that is setting up an angle? Yes, I do. Everything I just talked about. They're not giving this match away for no reason on TV. We might still get the match anyway at All Out, but this is obviously setting up an angle for next week. Anti-M-Bishop 07. What the hell was Tony Khan on tonight booking this show? Bro, what woke up and chose violence? No hot-shotting of storylines if you got less than 2 weeks until All Out. And he says, and Danielson Garcia is a Match of the Year candidate. Yeah, it's on the list for sure. Quintus Brown, Omega at 50% is still that dude. Very good show. Damien says, geez, AEW can't go a week without someone bleeding. Well, neither can your girlfriend. I'm just kidding. I love Damien. Thank you for the $1.99. What am I doing? We've got Joseph Brooks. I'm going to get myself in trouble. The $9.99 Super Chat. Do you think that we are starting to see a small, not large, but small flashback to the WCW versus WWE wars with AEW and WWE now? People are returning and debuting and jumping ship, and GCW is like the ECW. GCW is not ECW. That's number one. I mean, you could say maybe it's the closest thing to a modern equivalent, but it is not ECW. I mean, look, we have had people going, you know, back and forth already to a degree. I think with Triple H in power, you're going to start to see the pendulum, shifting back and forth a little more often. So it's got that feeling a little bit, but, you know, anybody who lived through that whole Monday Night War period, it was a lot more competitive than it is now with WWE. It's not as fun because AEW is still so far behind WWE, just in terms of ratings and business and, you know, the big shows that they do. And you knew back then that, you know, Vince McMahon, you know, the foot was on the neck and you didn't know how he was going to respond. WWE is not, they don't feel that threat the way they did 25 years ago. So unless you live through that period, I know it's hard for like newer fans to kind of understand this because they just see two big companies. Oh, it's the Monday Night War all over again. It's not, it's really not, but it's great to have a healthy second company that has money to throw around. And yes, it's fun to see who's going to go from one place to the other. You know, there's a little bit of that now. There is a little bit of that now. And I think it'll ratchet up even more now that Triple H is in power. You're going to have people who are going to want to work for him when their contract is up. So, you know, maybe a little bit, but believe me, it's not the same thing. Isaiah Duzan, $5 Super Chat. I really enjoyed the show tonight. Had a lot of fun, and I got to see Punk live again. Danielson and Garcia was a fantastic match. Thank you, Isaiah. Be calm, see clearly. Mox against Punk versus MJF versus Hangman. So unnecessary. I don't think we're getting a four-way. We are not going to get a four-way. Rodimus Prime. Wild show tonight. I loved every bit of it. Next week is going to be epic. We got a new sub. Welcome to the chat. Always good to see Asuka pop up on my screen. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, if only Rampage was must see every now and then, but sadly, it is can miss television these days. King Bling Blah, part one. I would kick off the show with Mox, Punk, and MJF causes a DQ. Punk and Moxley are so angry that they both want MJF. The show closes with a three-way promo. Part two. The promo ends with Punk and Mox wanting to beat the living hell out of MJF. They both agree to add him to All Out, making it a three-way. Yeah, I mean, look, you could do that, but again, it's like rewarding bad behavior. You know what I mean? It's like, it really doesn't make sense. Like, it really doesn't. Because Tony Khan would still have to approve that. And why the hell would Tony Khan say yes to that? But look, it's wrestling. So if they want to make it work, they could always make it work. We've got Mr. Notorious Chico 86. This obviously is leading to a triple threat match. I don't think CM Punk is fully healed, and if you add Hangman, he could take the pinfall. Yeah, that's a good point. It's possible that Punk is not 100%. Maybe they feel like they have to add somebody, but look, we're getting a singles match next week. You know, maybe they don't go 20 minutes, but they're already doing it next week. They're going to give us some form of a match. So he has to be healed enough to do a singles match. I don't know how much that necessarily is factoring into things, but you could be right. We weren't sure if Punk was going to be back in time for All Out. Maybe this is to sort of, you know, just in case he's not 100% and he needs to take it easy. Maybe they feel like putting Hangman in there as the third man is what they need to do. Possible. EJ Slamp with the $4.99. I know Hangman is still over, but I think maybe a heel turn would be good for him. He was acting kind of heelish in the Punk feud. What do you think? I tell you what, the way Punk was talking tonight, I almost feel like Punk should be the one going heel. But that would ruin the whole MJF thing, because he has to at least be a babyface until he drops the belt to MJF. But Punk is a heel. And then maybe we get a Punk and Danielson feud. I know Punk is dying to work with him again. I'm sure we're going to get that match at some point, but I love the idea of maybe Punk being the one to be more heelish and not Hangman necessarily. Brian Becerra with that $40 super chat drop from earlier on. Punk and Moxley would be a no contest. They'll either do it one more time and add Page, make it a triple threat. When Punk retains the title, MJF comes out, and we have a face-to-face to end the all-out pay-per-view. Be calm, see clearly. In Mox's defense, there's only one AEW champion in the Combat Club, and he is the only two-time AEW champion, not Jericho, not Omega. It is Jon Moxley. Fire Panda, 007. What is the best storyline AEW has done, and what is the worst storyline that AEW has done? I mean, there's been a bunch of programs I haven't really been into. I mean, there's been a lot of Dark Order stuff that I didn't really care for. There was that stuff with Miro when he first came in doing the video game shit with him and Sabian and who are they feuding with? Best Friends, I think it was. I don't know which one has been the worst, but there's been a bunch I haven't cared for. The best stuff, Punk and MJF would probably get my vote. The build-up to their first matches, the promos, I thought was great. MJF coming out that time and giving us his life story and telling us when he was bullied as a kid. And like all the stuff and the planning that went into that, I just thought was perfect. So I might go Punk and MJF. That might be the one for me. I Am Barbarian 1991. Been a fan since 2016. Thank you for the great content and for giving me enjoyment through a rough depression spell. I am here to serve. Hope you are having a good night. I am here to serve all of you and entertain all of you and keep you occupied for a couple of hours on a Wednesday night. Make you forget all of the horrible things that may be possibly going on in your lives, but hopefully it's all good stuff for most of you. Food Hive. AEW fans have done a great job with not giving that stupid ass what chant life here. It's starting to infect a small amount and I hate it. Boo them out. I don't think it's going anywhere. Deontay Soigne. Yo Sala Monster. Great night of wrestling. I watch Bret Hart matches on my day off. Smart man. Hart Foundation promos and a great end to the night. Much love. It's a great way to spend the day. If you're going to watch matches, that's what I would do. King Bling Blah, should a wrestler acquire the what chance? No. We already had a wrestler acquire the what chance. He created them. He's the most famous wrestler of all time. And look what happened. Here we are. 20 years later, still dealing with this shit. I don't want to see anybody acquire it. I want to see it buried with the 24/7 title. You could dig a shallow grave. You could put the 24/7 title in there. You could put the what chance in there with it. throw Russo in there, Pritchard, Kevin Dunn, and then just kind of put the dirt on top. We've got JM with the $20 super chat. No one interrupting Powerhouse Hobbs' promo was probably the most realistic thing ever shot on AEW. No one in their right mind should be strolling up to heel Hobbs to rudely interrupt him while he is talking. Well, QT Marshall did it last week, and he's still breathing, so that's the problem with that. Drew Johnson, again, thank you for that super chat that I read earlier on. And yes, support the channel, hit that like button. I know we've already hit our goal tonight for likes, but I want to get it even higher, so let's get that number up. Rizzo with the $20. How do you feel about MJF and it being weird for MJF to get a title shot is how I feel about the rumored Sasha and Naomi return to the Women's Tag Team Championship. In storyline, how do they explain those three being rewarded? Those three? I didn't know there was a third. Like the third man in WCW. Who's the third man? Who's the third woman? You said Sasha and Naomi. Oh, you're talking about MJF. Okay. I thought you were talking about Sasha, Naomi, and a third woman. I'm like, who the fuck is the third woman? Did I miss something here? He was talking about MJF. Now, I'll tell you what. You can actually make better sense out of the WWE one, and I'll tell you why. Because the last time we saw Sasha and Naomi, they were the tag team champions. Nobody ever beat them for the belts. MJF has never been the AEW World Champion before. In fact, the last time we saw MJF, he was pinned and beaten by Wardlow, who was the TNT champion. So he has no claim to the title. He'll have to earn it in some way. Sasha and Naomi could come in and say, hey, those are our belts. We were the last ones to hold them. Nobody ever pinned us. So you could at least argue that that does make more sense. The Nacho Man wants to know my thoughts on the Better Call Saul finale. I was going to talk a little bit about it on the podcast on Sunday. I thought it was fantastic. It was bittersweet, but I thought they stuck the landing, and it's one of the greatest television shows ever made. I'm sad it's over. I'm sad the Breaking Bad universe has finally been put to bed, probably forever. But I loved it. I thought it was great. Thomas, thank you for the $2. What? Thomas, what? Thank you for the super chat. What? Rooster loving man, do you think the NXT brands are merging? Sure looks like it. I said on Sunday, I said if I was on the NXT UK brand right now and I wasn't being called over to NXT in Florida like Gallus and Tyler Bate and Jordan Devlin and some of these other people, I'd be very worried right now. Mr. Notorious, do you see WWE doing a War Games at this year's Survivor Series Raw versus SmackDown? I've only been calling for it for about 11 years now. Why would they do it now? Well, I guess we have Mr. War Games, though, who's running creative, Triple H. He's the one who brought it back to NXT. I don't know if they are or not. I think they absolutely should. It should have been a thing years ago. Raw versus SmackDown War Games, it sells itself. It sells itself. If Triple H is smart, War Games will become a main roster staple at Survivor Series. Survivor Series has not really been relevant in a very long time. I know they try to make it relevant, Raw versus SmackDown. It's really not. But you make a War Games main event, Raw versus SmackDown, and then I think you'll have people's attention. Fire Panda, Young Bucks turn on Omega in the finals. Change my mind. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Tuxedo T Servo, thank you for the $5. We've got IQBAL with the $5 super chat. Moxley wins next week as it is in Mox's home state of Ohio. Punk wins it all out. Doesn't make sense for Mox to lose after the trash Punk has been talking. There would have to be some kind of interference or something that would cause Punk to lose. could not just be a straight up clean win for Moxley. That I can't see. Could Moxley win? Could they sell, you know, Punk's foot? You know, he went after the foot. Foot is still hurt. You know, they could. They could. But, I don't know. You're going to have to shoot some kind of an angle to do that, though. If you're going to have Punk lose next week, first match back, AEW champion, I don't know that I would be doing that. Yeah, Moxley, you can talk about Moxley. Moxley's been booked stronger than anybody. Moxley's won all of his matches. He beat Tanahashi at Forbidden Door. Every match he's had since, whether it's Brody King, whatever, whoever they put in the ring with him, he's been mowing him down. He's been winning all of his matches. Mance Warner, all these matches that he's been having. I mean, Moxley has been on a roll. He's got to lose at some point. JM with the 10 spot. With Wardlow and FTR calling themselves the Pinnacle tonight, do you think there is a chance MJF ultimately retains control of the faction in a swerve? I do not. No. He is bigger than the Pinnacle at this point. MJF, he's a lone wolf. He is done with Wardlow. He is done with the Pinnacle. Quintus Brown, I have a feeling that Callis is going to align himself with Undisputed Elite and possibly cost the Bucks and Omega the Trios titles. Yeah, but that would only make sense if Undisputed Elite was in the match. I mean, why would he cost them the belts and put the belts on who? I mean, if the Dark Order go to the finals, I don't want to see the Dark Order as the Trios champions. I mean, again, maybe Hangman ends up wrestling when one of the members is injured, and so Hangman technically is a champion. I mean, if you're going to do that, you may as well put House of Black in there. Because then at least House of Black get the belts. I definitely could see Callis turning on Omega, though. I absolutely could see that if Kenny and the Bucks, if they're going to be positioned as babyfaces, Don Callis is not a babyface. Don Callis is a fucking snake oil salesman. He should not be and will not be a babyface. And so I could see him being a mouthpiece for, not that Adam Cole needs it, but aligned with Adam Cole and Red Dragon, yeah, I could see that working, sure. It was weird having Kenny come back out with him, but, you know, again, he was with him the last time we saw him. You know, it's not like he comes back and he's the babyface slapping hands with all the fans. But it was just weird seeing the fans cheer so loudly for Omega, and then there's Don Callis, who's, you know, fucking, as Jim Ross would say, a hemorrhoid on the ass of life. I don't know how long that alliance is going to last. HBKC83. Mets hold on to win. It is a good night. Yeah, you know, they got me nervous. It was dominance. And then all of a sudden, I'm about to go live, and it's like 6-5. I go, how the fuck did that happen? I'm like, they can't be losing three in a row. So I'm happy to hear that they were able to hold on for the win. Thomas with the $5. It was great seeing Omega back, and I see a three-way at All Out. Mox, Punk, and Hangman, but I see MJF playing a big part at the end. I do too. I think MJF he's coming back. MJF is on his way back very soon. Fire Panda, anyone who comes out of a box is over, was what Jim said to Russo regarding Terry Funk's debut as Chainsaw Charlie. You know, I recall an episode of SmackDown many years ago where Brother Love came out of a box during a segment with The Undertaker, and he wasn't fucking over. So that proves that whole theory wrong. Rizzo, the what chant is the reason why I cannot put Austin in my top three all-time favorite wrestlers. Wow. Austin's legacy has been ruined for Rizzo. Won't even put him on his Mount Rushmore. Drew Johnson, I've dealt with depression my entire life. Everyone keep their heads up. Solid Monster, thank you for everything you do. Thank you, Drew. Hopefully right now is a good time for you, a good period for you. I appreciate that. Thomas, thank you for the what chance. Darth Panic, who goes into the Hall of Fame under the Triple H regime? Triple H goes into the Hall of Fame under the Triple H regime. And after Triple H goes in, I believe Hunter Hearst Helmsley will be inducted. I think Terra Ryzen might get an induction in a couple of years. I don't know what he's been up to. Batista. Batista was supposed to go in a couple of years ago. He wanted to wait until the fans came back. I think Batista could headline. Batista could be one of the headliners in LA next year. But, you know, now that Vince is out of the picture, I'm hoping, you know, despite their the concussion lawsuit that they were part of and everything, you know, there are people who are not getting any younger who really should be acknowledged in their Hall of Fame. You know, the Legion of Doom is in the Hall of Fame. Demolition, you know, was sort of their answer to the Legion of Doom. They were my team when I was a kid, and they should be in there. They should be acknowledged, and they should have the opportunity to go on stage and say a few words. And Bill Eadie wasn't just Demolition Axe, you know, he was so many other, you know, characters and gimmicks and the Masked Superstar. And, you know, these are men who aren't going to be around one day, and it would be a shame, I think, if they weren't able to be part of a whole Hall of Fame ceremony. So they would be my pick. I would want Demolition. Rizzo says, yes, I was talking about MJF. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, with Vince gone, NXT UK can be relevant again. NXT UK seems like it's near death. So I wouldn't be so sure about that. BCOM, see clearly. Remember when Tyler Breeze and Fandango were the best part of Raw? I don't remember that at all. I never liked that pairing. I liked Tyler Breeze a lot when he was in NXT doing his own gimmick. I was never a big fan of the Breezango stuff. I didn't like it. He says, I forget the team name, but they both exceeded my it was Breezango. I was never a Breezango guy. We've got Draven Lord with the 999. I predict that MJF will interfere in the Punk and Moxley match as a protest to Tony for using ex-WWE guys in an AEW main event, leading to a triple threat at All Out. JM, Raw versus SmackDown, War Games. Paint the cage red since it is the main roster. No, do not paint the cage red. Keep the cage neutral. I don't know who came up with that red cage and who thought that was a good idea, but it sucks and they need to get rid of it. Bob the Builder, who do you think the AEW talent that WWE contacted? Ah, talking about some contract tampering, I see. I think it was Swerve Scott. I think it was Swerve Strickland, I guess he is. Hit Row just came back on TV literally not even a week ago. I think it was probably Swerve. That would be my guess. EJ Slamp, I'm currently on a road trip out west with my dad and brother, having a blast. What is your favorite road trip or family vacation that you went on? I can recall a 10-hour car ride from New York to Niagara Falls, Canada. I got to see the falls. They had a place there called Dutch Wonderland, which I was looking forward to going to, and then it rained all day, so I didn't get to go. I was pissed. And then another 10 hours in a car with 5 family members back home. 10 hours in an Oldsmobile. That was not fun. So I guess that wouldn't be my favorite. I named a road trip. I don't know that that would necessarily be my favorite. Fire Panda, why is the absolute worst Jim Cornette take? I don't hear all of his takes, so I couldn't tell you. But Fire Panda, thank you for the $5. I do appreciate that. Some good questions. Some good questions coming out of the show tonight. We got even more coming in here. How many likes do we have? What are we up to? 650, huh? 650. Let's aim for 675. Drew Johnson with the 5. HBK against Undertaker. Hell in a Cell. Bad Blood 97. Best match of all time. Never gets old watching it. It is certainly one of the best matches in WWE history. One of the best matches with the best debut of all time. Fire Panda, If Shawn stayed retired, then who does Undertaker face at WrestleMania 25 and 26? I mean, Shawn came back WrestleMania 19, so I mean that's impossible. It's impossible to know. I have no idea. It would have changed everything, right? I mean, who would Kurt Angle have wrestled at WrestleMania 21? That was, you know, a tremendous match. I don't know. I have no idea. Undertaker and Jericho never had a WrestleMania match. I don't think Undertaker and Jericho ever had a pay-per-view match. Maybe we would have had an Undertaker-Chris Jericho match at WrestleMania. Becom, see clearly, fashion files. Come on. Look, I'm not saying that there wasn't some stuff that Breezango did that wasn't amusing, but I was never into that whole act. I just wasn't. It just wasn't my thing. All right, well, since you guys achieved the impossible tonight, we have broken the likes goal. And so you have earned the right to be the booker. By the way, I have added a few faces to be the booker. So we'll see if any of the newer faces pop up. But let's go ahead. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
You guys made it happen. Broke the goal. And we will kick things off with a super chat from JM before I get into this. JM, thank you for the five. A family trip to see Das Wunderkind doesn't seem very entertaining to me, but you do you. I didn't say Das Wunderkind. I said Dutch Wonderland. I caught myself. I almost said Dutch oven. Rizzo with the 10. I know I'm looking too far ahead, but I have a prediction. I think WrestleMania 43 is in my city of Detroit. We hosted WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 23. Makes some sense, at least. Totally depends on what city bids for WrestleMania. If it went by cities every 10 or 20 years, then New York would have had WrestleMania again. And instead, New Jersey got it, not New York. So it doesn't matter that it was there for 3 and 23. If Detroit wants it, then they have to make a bid. It's just that simple. That's how these things work now. I don't make the rules, but that's the process now. It's a whole bidding process. All right, so we begin with the men, and we begin with, well, would you look at that? Would you look at that? Drew was just talking about the very first Hell in a Cell, and I just literally, not 60 seconds ago, said that it had the best debut of all time. And look who is on our screen from the very end of the very first Hell in a Cell match. The monster, the big red machine. There is Kane. That's the Kane I remember. That right there. That is the original Kane. Look at this fucking badass. Look at the mask. Ripping the door off its hinges. You're going to tell me that there's another debut in this company that was better than this? That Chris Jericho talking into a microphone with The Rock was better than this? You're out of your fucking mind. This right here was the best debut of all time. Let's see who the original Kane is going to be stepping into the ring with. It will be Kane going one-on-one with Bruiser Brody. Wow. Talk about a hoss fight. What a fucking match. Bruiser Brody against the original Kane. That's a match. That's a fight. That's a fight that I'd love to see. It's a shame that Bruiser never got a run in a big company like WWE. Had he ever gone there, he would have just been fed to Hogan, probably. But man, what a match. There's some fantasy warfare for you. Bruiser, Brody, and Kane. All right, fingers crossed. This is usually where things go south. We begin on the women's... Oh, my God. Oh, Nicole Bass. Well, let's see. Nicole Bass one-on-one with Ty. Well, I guess she's not Ty Conti anymore. Now she's Ty Mello. Well, I already played the buzzer. This thing was over before I even finished it. Let's move on. Let's pretend that didn't happen. Tag teams time. Oh, would you look at this? Two of the three members of the Shield. According to CM Punk, the two better members of the Shield. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. Look at that. With those classic WWF title belt designs. With those classic tag team titles on their shoulder. It is the Shield. Who will the Shield be stepping into the ring with? It will be the Shield taking on Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik. I don't think that match would be very good. All due respect to Sheiky Baby. Rollins and Reigns. You know what I still remember? I'm trying to remember. It was Rollins and Reigns. Two tremendous tag team matches. If you want to get a real sense of how good they were as a team, there was a pre-show match for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I want to say it was 2013. I think I was at that show. It might have been the show that I was at in Philly. In 2013, it was the Usos against Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. I think it was Roman and Seth. Tremendous match. They looked like they were on a mission to prove something because they didn't want to be on the pre-show. Like, oh, you're going to put us on the kickoff show? We'll show you. And they had a tremendous match. But then I also think of the Battleground match with the Rhodes Brothers against the Shield. Tremendous stuff. And we had Dusty giving Moxley the final bionic elbow. John Moxley, the last person ever to take the bionic elbow from Dusty Rhodes. That was some good shit. We have got Fire Panda. You booked the women worse than Tony Khan. I don't know what it is. There's actually a lot of good women on that randomizer, whatever you want to call it, but I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just one of those things. But I'll tell you what, Kane against Bruiser Brody, there's a match to think about. Food Hive with the $4.99. Be the Booker is cursed with whatever the stream is about that night. We literally talked about two of three members of the Shield and the debut of Kane. Unbelievable. I'm telling you, it's just fate, the way it works out sometimes. It's very eerie. Very eerie. But all I do, I push a button and it just goes. I have no control over it. We're very close to 700 likes. Let's try to hit 700 before we get out of here. What do I think of NXT going head-to-head with All Out? Is that official yet? Because I don't know that they have officially announced the start time for the NXT show that weekend. It could be in the afternoon. But if it's going head-to-head with All Out, obviously that's a very calculated move on Triple H's part. Very calculated. And that NXT show is not going to do very well. Not too many people are going to be choosing that show over All Out. I will be watching All Out, and I will be going live on YouTube that same night. And if there is an NXT show, it's going to have to wait until the following day. So I don't think it's very good for NXT. JM, there's a lot of good women in AEW's women's roster as well. Solo Khan. They have a lot of very talented women on the roster. Dakota Scorpio. Who is going to watch Nick Jr. over All Out? Not me. I've got a podcast to do in the morning, and I've got a pay-per-view in the evening. I ain't got no time for NXT. You want me to review NXT? Run it on a different day. EJ Slemp, why did WWE never use the Freebird rule for the Shield? I don't know. I think Moxley was the U.S. champion, right? I think Moxley was kind of doing his own thing. But they've used it for the New Day. So they did use it for them. For the Shield, I think it was just because Mox had the U.S. belt. Fire Panda. All jokes, LOL. Love you, Sala Monster. And Food Hive. The AEW women's division gets a bad rep because of their early struggles. I think the women's division has improved tremendously, and I am a fan of most of them. It's not so much about the talent. They are stockpiled with talent. Thunder Rosa, Toni Storm, Ruby Soho, Chris Statlander, Jamie Hayter, Athena. I mean, and probably more that I'm missing. Those are the ones that jump out at me. It has more to do with just how they're booked and how much time they get. You know, you saw it again tonight in the Toni Storm match with Kylan King. Half the match took place during commercial. Now, a lot of the matches tonight were plagued by the constant commercial breaks, but it's typical with the women's matches that at least half, if not more of them, will typically happen during commercial. It's very clear that they don't prioritize them. I think that's the issue that a lot of people have with it, more than there being anything wrong with the actual talent in the division. I don't think that's what people have an issue with. Yeah, it's the booking. I mean, that's King Droopy. He said it right. It's the booking. It always comes down to the booking. Mr. Ozone, they might have. Yeah, they might have used the Freebird rule with the Wyatts. I don't know. Did they? I don't remember if they did or not. They may have. But I know they have with the New Day, so it's not like they're against the idea of doing it. Fire Panda, best Be the Booker match. Boy, you know, I've done so many of them. I've been, people, believe it or not, next month, we're only a few weeks away. I think maybe about 3 weeks. We're going to hit the two-year anniversary of Be the Booker. So I've booked a lot of matches, a lot of bad matches. I've booked some good ones. I'm quite partial to Kurt Angle Moo. Against Kurt Angle.
Moo.
Moo! Is that the $100 Moo Super Chat? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Mountain of Omnipotence. I thought that's what Edge was going to originally call the Judgment Day, and I said, how can you call it the Mountain of Omnipotence? How are you going to call your faction Moo? Thankfully, they didn't do that. But JM, thank you for the Moo. Same as well. All jokes. Great stream. Let's get 700 likes. Thank you, JM, for the $100 super chat bomb. A fine way to close out this stream. Yeah, I got to go Kurt Angle against Kurt Angle. Greatest match of all time. You can't beat that, right? Well, I think we hit 700. So thank you guys for that. We'll get a whole bunch more on the archive. I like to set goals for the live stream. So we'll set another goal on Friday night. That's when I'm going to be back. We're going to be talking SmackDown, probably Rampage. You know, Rampage, I think, going forward is going to be kind of a game time decision. Sometimes it's just, is it worth it or not? Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff on the show this week. I'll probably watch it, but, you know, just, it's not an important show. You know, it's hard sometimes to really get excited about it. Not a bad hour, but it's just not a whole lot going on to be excited about. It's a very missable show. But I will be live for SmackDown at the very least on Friday night, if not Rampage, and we'll do this all over again. I hope you've been enjoying the streams now. We're going Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, plus pay-per-views. So you're getting more live Sala Monster. And again, I will be back on Friday night for the SmackDown stream. I think we've covered all the important stuff here tonight. And I'll see you guys on Friday night. Take care, guys.